Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Charlie.
It's already happening. And she is flying right into the heart of it. The enemy is here. The battlefield is locked. Skyscraper.
Kill us for us in this briefcase. There's a satellite tracking system. Could destroy an entire city. It's headed for a third world country. Now go!
We are the People's Democratic Liberation Party.
You're standing between me and $1.5 billion.
Every 5 minutes I will kill a hostage until you return the case to me.
Just go, and I'll tell you where the case is. Anna. Nicole. Skyscraper.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie Podcast, testing the strength of friendship one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We're part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter and Facebook at themaindamie. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony Delvecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, Internet.
This, we are coming to you. I believe this is the second week of July. About ready to the next movie of Dwayne The Rock Johnson's career. Skyscraper is about to hit theaters. So, in conjunction with that, we decided to go back in the Wayback Machine to 1996 to
Did we watch the Towering Inferno?
Is that we did not. Oh, we did not watch the Towering Inferno. We watched the original Skyscraper. Few people know that the Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie is a remake. It is a remake of the 1996 Skyscraper movie starring Anna Nicole Smith.
Which is based on the book, right?
Yeah, based on the book, the Emily Bronte book. Directed by Raymond Martino in 1996, it stars Anna Nicole Smith, Richard Steinmetz, and Daron McBee, although you might know him as Malibu from American Gladiators.
Malibu!
Yes, we're all very big fans of Malibu.
Is he still alive?
He is. His wife, on the other hand, is not.
Oh, well, I figured, you know, like, Freud's out the wazoo, so.
No, Duron McBee is very much alive. okay. He also was in Batman Forever, an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and an episode of Married with Children.
Yes, I remember that.
I remember him from Curb Your Enthusiasm. He played Thor. It was supposed to be a wrestler that I think Larry gets into like a fender bender with.
I don't even see him on the IMDb page.
He doesn't have a picture.
Really?
But he's there. Duron McBee. Skyscraper. Have you guys ever seen this movie before?
No.
Not even a little bit?
No. Oh, he was also in Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
This is not the Duron McBee podcast.
Right. No,
stop spoiling our new shows, Dan.
I'm sorry. No, I have never seen this movie, and I am very sad and depressed, just angry at myself that I have.
Okay. So are you familiar with Anna Nicole Smith's work? Like, how familiar are you with her?
I was familiar with her TV show that she had.
Okay.
And that's Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Okay, Mark?
Yeah, probably the same, except I probably had the added benefit of it was Playboy, right? That she was probably in. Playboy's probably a good guess.
It was either that or Hustler, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's the research that really brings the show together.
Top notch. Well, until we start making some cash getting our own research department, this is what you're going to get.
Yes. So, Mark may or may not know her from possibly Playboy, so what would be...
Some duty magazine.
Yeah.
Or is Mark just trying to play it off like, oh, yeah, it's... I might have seen her in that. Not that I really know what Playboy is.
As I was saying the sentence, I was like, oh, I'm sure it's Playboy. Then as it was coming out, I was like, wait, maybe it was Penthouse. She seems more Penthouse.
Yeah, she wasn't really in Playboy.
Yeah, she wasn't. She was no Pam Anderson.
I mean, back in the day, you know, yeah, she was a looker, that Anna Nicole Smith.
That's about all she could do going by this movie.
Yep. So, just for those of you that don't know Anna Nicole Smith, she made her film debut in 1994 as the Coen Brothers' The Hudsucker Proxy. And then in 1994, she also appeared in Naked Gun 33 and a third, The Final Insult. In 1995, she had a lead role in To the Limit, which was a box office bomb, and then came to this. By 1996, Smith's acting career had declined considerably after the failure of her previous motion picture. Hollywood studios began to realize her public popularity did not affect her acting abilities or ticket sales at the box office. This is from her Wikipedia page. She appeared as herself in the 1995 pilot episode of The Naked Truth. Smith attempted to revitalize her film career with a leading role in Skyscraper 1996. The low-budget direct-to-video film offered Smith no more than softcore exploitation, quote-unquote, and her movie career again stalled. So, yes, we are talking about Skyscraper. We all watched it, unfortunately.
And we subjected ourselves to this.
Yes. So, last week we had Dan... breakdown Fantastic Four. So this time it is Mark's turn. Mark, why don't you give us the rundown of what Skyscraper is about?
Yeah, no problem. But is it just going to be back and forth between me and Dan? You never want to do this, or?
Oh yeah,
hey,
no.
Ed, you should break one down.
Hey, I have a lot on my hands with this whole thing, keeping you guys reined in. So if I decide one day that I'm going to break down. I will, but it's not this week.
The great thing about this one is that the movie is so incomprehensible that even if I jump around to different tangents, it would feel like it was the whole movie.
So you would be doing the movie justice, actually, if you did that.
By actually putting it in a correct order.
Right.
Basically, the nicest thing you could say about it is that it's Die Hard with Anna Nicole Smith, right?
Yeah. That's what it tries to be. Anyway.
Yes.
So we pick it up with Anna Nicole Smith is a limo helicopter pilot, apparently.
Which is a pretty genius business model.
Yeah. Yeah, and apparently everybody she drives is late. But they yeah.
I don't know if it's a practical business model. I don't know how many helipads are just available in the city of Los Angeles.
They mentioned that at one point. There are only 7 helipads in the Los Angeles area.
Although they only...
It caters to, like, the super rich.
Right. Yeah. Although in the movie, they only land on the same helipad over and over again.
Right.
No matter what building it's supposed to be.
So, good.
I like how the first pair of guys to get into the limo copter, they go like, step on it, we're late. Like, what do you mean, step on it? there's literally no traffic.
Yeah.
So, we meet Anna Nicole Smith's character, which I will refer, because I don't remember her name, we'll just call her One Rocket Charlie for the rest of this breakdown. Because that is the only thing that I can remember. That is apparently her call sign for the helicopter. So she lands on the roof. We get introduced to her. She says a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo about, you know, trying to read off a piece of paper what a helicopter pilot should be saying to air traffic control. And it sounded like every air traffic control person she talked to was flirting with her. So I don't know why. I don't know if the actors just project it when they were doing the ADR bits for that. But anyway, so she goes and she lands on the helipad, and the first person that runs up, you know, as Dan said, says, step on it, we're late. So then she flies him, and they land on top of a building, and then he goes downstairs and immediately meets someone with a car.
What was that about? They took the longest way possible just to get into a car.
So they meet in the back alley, and they make sure that they frame that the car that they are meeting is a government car. They make sure you see that on the license plate, so yep. They don't have to do any introductions to this. You know, these are the government, and apparently. From what I could gather, they were offering some kind of bootleg battleship game or something inside of a briefcase.
That's what it looked like, yeah.
Is it ever explained what is in the briefcase?
I will say I have seen this movie twice in preparation for this podcast, and I have no fucking clue what's going on.
Thank you. Yeah. I wanted to make sure, because I paid attention as closely as a human could possibly pay attention to this movie, and I didn't recall them saying, we need this device for the doomsday button or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I think there are 2 suitcases in play at one point. One is a black suitcase, and one is like a silver suitcase.
And I think one has, we'll get this later, I think one has... They need the parts from one to be able to work the other. I think we learned that at some point.
It's incomprehensible, that's all.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who is on whose side.
Yeah.
It's like, it's definitely Anna Nicole Smith against other people.
Yeah.
But like, the other people are shooting each other, and then they're like, maybe they're like double-crossing the other one, but it's impossible to tell.
So we kick off our plot with some incomprehensible, you know, black market dealings where this might be a rogue government official or maybe it's a setup. And all of a sudden a truck pulls up that says Bud Dry on the side. I don't remember if that was actually a beer or if they had to make up a fake one for like Bud Draft or whatever.
I think Bud Dry was a real beer.
Yeah, I think so too.
They probably got some coin for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know if it was one, but anyway, so that pulls it up. And my favorite part about this, before all hell breaks loose, is that when they open the truck, you can clearly see it's empty inside, and the people in the alley can clearly see that this truck is completely empty. And that doesn't make them move. They're like, ah, yeah, this empty truck's here. Yeah, we're good. Well, it just happens to be blocking our way out. And they're setting up a ramp in the middle of the truck.
Yeah, that was very strange. So far, this movie is off to a terrible start.
Yeah. And then we see what I would like to call an extra from the Libyans from Back to the Future show up on the fire escape with a bazooka.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, for reasons I don't know what the trigger point was for them, this all of a sudden he fires the bazooka. And misses, you would think, with the element of surprise and being that close in range, he would have been able to take them all out with one round, but misses completely, hits the car, and then all hell breaks loose. That's when we first see the great Malibu, pops out of the Ipa Dry truck, along with, a couple other goons, which I didn't realize, you know, one of the goons we meet later, and when she popped up, I was like, oh, I didn't see her before. And then I realized, looking back the second time, like, oh, they were all there in the opening scene. Every little sneaky, like, supposed to be a surprise thing, they were all there in the beginning.
It's all foreshadowing, man.
Yeah, all foreshadowing, and you can't catch it. So
brilliantly.
Just a couple things for this scene. A, it is the fastest reloading bazooka of all time.
Yes.
That guy gets off like six rounds.
They have unlimited. Yeah, they have unlimited ammo.
It's probably just the same shot every time. Oh,
we'll get to the ammo part when I get in later inside this inside the tower, where I literally hand count it.
And B part of me stopping you. This is actually the best scene in the movie.
Yes. It is.
It's the highest production value.
Right, the car chase.
They blow up so many cars.
Yep.
I think they blow up the truck, too. Oh, no, the car drives through the truck.
Yeah.
And Anna Nicole Smith isn't in it.
She's not even in it. But they blew their small budget on this scene. And I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I can appreciate this scene.
Yeah, I remember thinking, seeing the car chase, I was like, okay, so this... It's got a cool car chase scene in it. Decent. And they're blowing shit up. So it's not terrible.
It starts with its best foot forward.
Yes.
Yeah, and to finish up the confusion part, you have the Malibu led forces, which I don't even know if he's the leader of that group, but I'm just going to say he is, at one end, and then when they try to escape the other, all of a sudden a minivan pulls up, and three more people get out and start firing guns at this government official. Which is what makes him back up and go, are trucks that fragile?
He cut right through that thing. like a tin can.
I don't know how that was possible, but yeah, so he just rips through the back of his semi truck into traffic, and apparently we still have not alerted the police. After six bazooka shots, at least 100 rounds, and a car going through a semi and setting things on fire. So they finish the scene, and the one guy escapes into a mini skyscraper. the one that's under construction. Mm-hmm. And
but not the skyscraper.
Not the skyscraper. Not yet. And he gets chased down by... who at the time I thought might have been the token black character of the movie, but ends up being
the main villain.
The main villain.
Yeah.
Fairfax, right?
Fairfax. Yeah.
I thought he was just a regular guy too. they bring nothing. He doesn't dress like the.
He's got that sweet vest.
Yeah.
It's not even sweet. It's so bad.
You know, he reminds me of Trevor from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That's pretty good.
Which was What was her name? What was the sister's name?
Hillary?
Hillary? Yeah. Her husband? Yeah. The one that dies while bungee jumping?
Yeah.
There was no discerning characteristics about this guy that lets you know, oh, this is the big bad.
He was South African and he quoted things. That's how you knew he was the bad guy.
Well, that's something you learn after a couple of scenes.
Yeah, when they get up on the roof.
Shakespeare.
And he quotes Shakespeare on top of the roof. And somehow is a crack shot in the fact that he both shot the case, shot the handcuff off the briefcase, and shot the guy at the same time with two shots to make him fall off the roof and save this briefcase. Which, I'm not going to watch it a third time, but thinking back, I don't know what the angle would have been where the case coming off his hand wouldn't have fell off the roof with him as well. I don't know how physics work, but yeah. So anyway, so he saves the briefcase by shooting him off and being very pretentious about quoting Shakespeare. And then, you know, he picks it up, and then the next thing we cut to is a, I believe, I don't know if there's anything between these two. Aunt can correct me if I'm wrong.
I have no idea sequence of events in this fucking movie.
Yeah, okay. So I think right after that, we cut to the first person view of somebody going through One Rocky Charlie's apartment. And it's all photos of Anna Nicole Smith.
Yep. It's just photo shoots.
Photo shoots of Anna Nicole Smith all over the place. And it's being intercut with scenes of her showering. Just out of nowhere, just all of a sudden it cuts. You see the first person shot of the person entering the apartment, and then it just cuts to full topless nudity. Like,
real quick.
Without a build up.
Real quick, at least they try to sell you that it's not someone that she knows coming through. Because you just hear the real. like some creepy dude, you know?
Yeah. But it was like a horror movie about the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Which would have been far more. Far better than what we actually get.
Yeah, and it's the first, probably the second time, because when she's in the helicopter, they use the same shot about two or three times, even in the early scenes.
Of her laughing.
Yeah, of her laughing and her hand on the control.
On the stick.
But I believe they use the same two shots of her in the shower, one facing the camera, showing everything, and the other one with her back turned a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so eventually this first person makes her way into the bathroom and sneaks in, and you find out that it is her husband. Because he pops in and you find out immediately that he's a cop because he pushes her up against the wall and goes, you know, put your hands on the wall, and does one of those fake arresting type deal things, and then
it wasn't been there.
Yeah, exactly. And then it leads into a gratuitous sex scene, softcore wise, but the only one that makes sense in the entire movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it's husband wife, air quotes, having sex.
They don't know how sex works in this scene.
It's weird.
The guy is like, he's doing like a yoga pose over her. He's curled into a ball while on top of her. It's very strange.
Yeah. And
They don't commit to it. That's the thing.
Yeah, and unless he's John Holmes size, he is way too far away to be doing anything.
It's Tommy Wiseau directed sex scene.
Yeah. Maybe that's what he was planning. Like, he did that on purpose. Like, I'm packing.
Yeah.
So I have to stand a good foot away.
Also impale her.
And then again, they repeat the same shots a couple times in it. Going from doing the laying down on their side doggy to yoga pose scene at least a couple times.
I just want to point out to the listener, I watched this movie at work.
Power move.
Yeah.
Power move.
Your move. Your move.
Your move, Les Moonves.
Come and get me.
So it goes through and, you know, they're just about to finish, whatever the finish would have looked like in this movie. and then their beepers go off.
Yeah.
Or at least his goes off. I thought it was going to be simultaneous beepers, but... so his goes off, and apparently he finally got the call that there was, like, some kind of terrorist attack in the middle of Los Angeles.
The one he's been waiting for.
Yeah.
This is it, big show.
This is it. Which leads into the most ridiculous scene in the movie, in terms of the script, where they have this argument over having a child.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A baby.
It.
Oh, and it's this so bad.
She is actually bad for most of the movie, but in this, she's really bad.
Because she's actually trying.
Yeah. She's trying to deliver these lines emotionally, and it's not working. At least doing the badass lines later on in the skyscraper. Yeah, you got it. Okay, I get it. You right. know.
The skyscraper, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark said the name.
I said the name, late title card. Yeah, so he gets off, yeah. Yeah, probably, right?
He doesn't, though.
He doesn't.
No. There, and she doesn't, and she is pissed about it.
She wanted a baby.
Right then and there, they had to have that kid.
Yeah. Which leads me to a thought later in the movie, which we'll get to, that I thought they were going to do, but they didn't go fully there. So he gets the call that he's got to go check this out. And, you know, he heads off, and then she gets a call that they got a ticket for a VIP that should get the high-end treatment because he bought 4 hours of her time. Ooh. I believe it's how they word it.
Yeah. I just want to stop you, Mark.
Yeah.
He doesn't go off. She drops him off.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Via that's helicopter.
Right.
And
oh, yeah, that's the most
she's the most unprofessional helicopter driver ever.
Yeah.
She could have put them both in danger.
Yeah, she's purposefully driving erratic to scare him. Because he doesn't want to have a baby. Or he's just making up excuses for why he doesn't want to have a baby at that moment.
He actually comes up with a good reason. Right? Because I think he tells her, like, do you really want to bring a kid into this environment? You know, I see the worst of the worst. His reasoning is actually pretty sound. Like, from a cop's standpoint, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's not one of those things like, yeah, we'll get to it when the time is right. You know, he has a reason.
She has a reason for wanting babies, because I quote, well, excuse me for still believing in Sunday walks in the park and little babies. This is her Oscar moment.
And I was going to bring up the line before that Dan said the second half of, where they were trying to have a profound moment, which is one of those moments I thought of the writer when they were writing it going, oh, this is gold. This is going to be great. When they were like, yeah, you live up here in the clouds while I'm down on the street seeing, you know, the worst of the worst.
Because get it? You're a helicopter
pilot.
And I'm a cop. that Sunday morning. That's such a bad line. I totally forgot about that. How can I forget about a line like that?
There's so many of them. So drops, which begs the question of how he got home in the first place, if he left his car at work.
His buddy drops him off.
Oh, his buddy dropped him off.
The terrible jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is this the...
About fucking goats, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so...
It made absolutely no sense.
Okay, so this is like one of those new, like, horror movies now with cell phones. They have to have an excuse for, you know, if he's going to say he doesn't have the car, that's why he's got to be in the helicopter pilot. We need to have this excuse for how he got here and all that.
Yeah.
So there's not, in this movie, so there's not a plot hole in this film, which we'll get to in a second, which we talked about in our chat about this. So this is where it gets, from this point up into when they actually get into the skyscrapers, where things jumble a little bit for me.
Skyscraper, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark's giving away too much.
I forget the name of the skyscraper to mention it. So
isn't it like in excess or something like that?
Yeah, in excess. This guy's standing with cue cards on the top. So I think the next turn of events is she picks up. I think we go to the cop. No, we cut to the one of the bad guy groups. I think Malibu's crew breaking into Zyrtec or whatever the evil.
I literally have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever, yeah. Zyrtec sounds good.
Something like that.
Run with that.
Breaking into, which is clearly an office building in an industrial park in Los Angeles. just with some really cheap signs on it. And apparently, for some reason, they go through this whole plan to try and not make noise, and then Bazooka Guy decides to rappel up the side of the building, which would probably make the most noise out of anything. So he gets up there, they break in, and then this is when I think they run into the other crew, because I didn't notice this until the second thing. They kill the one security guard, and then the other one that's the inside guy was part of the second crew that showed up.
But they never make any mention of that.
They mention that. You think they're together.
Right.
It takes a second viewing to go, oh, no, they're okay. You know, they're probably all the same team, but for some reason they're always seen as separate.
Is that the karate guy?
No.
It's right before the karate guy. That's the curly-haired German-esque Russian guy. The Kenny G looking.
He was bald, and then he had like the long mullet in the back.
What we would call a skullet.
A skullet.
Yeah.
Right.
And then that leads us to, of course, the Asian security guard knows karate.
How bad is that?
With the obvious, as I believe is either, I think it was Ant in the chat pointed out, the obvious chest protector.
That was me.
The cop uniform.
Yeah, his chest puffs out like a good 2 inches. But the rest of his body, you could just tell, is really skinny. Like he has smaller shoulders, but his chest is just huge. You can see the guy's really punching him in the chest pretty hard. Because he's got the padding on.
Yeah, and this is our other goon, who I thought might have been an American Gladiator, but I believe is De Palma, who is... been a goon in some action movies throughout that time frame. I kind of recognize the name a little bit. So he, and obviously, you know, since it's America, you know, the white goon, beats the Asian guy in karate by, I believe, kicking him through something and setting off the alarms.
I think he, like, breaks his back with a couple punches.
Yeah. And then something sets off the alarm. And then I think that's when we cut to cop guy. And they get a call. And they just happen to be right around the corner from this break-in.
Mm-hmm.
And
very fortunate.
Yeah, very fortunate that they're right there.
Well,
he's too...
Depending on who you're talking about. Wink, wink.
Yeah. So, these two, I'm assuming homicide detectives, take this breaking and entering call over the radio to go check it out themselves, with literally no backup.
Right. They don't need backup. This is the 90s, man.
And then they go in and they walk up to the door. And for some reason, this door that had high-tech security and all that is just magically open now. So he takes this as, you know, there must be something better going on. We better split up and you go around to the back with the car. So they split up. Cop guy walks in and finds the dead security guard. And then he runs into Kenny G guy, right? And arrest him.
Maybe.
Is that how they get Kenny G guy?
He asks him to cuff himself.
Yeah, and then he cuffs him. And what I think the cutaway was, looks like he cuffed him to the dead body.
Right.
Instead of saying, the cutaway looks like he's cuffing himself to the dead body.
That's an awful lot of trust.
Yeah.
To put into a terrorist.
Cuff yourself.
here, cuff yourself. I'm going to go over here now. And then, I don't think you see that guy ever again.
You'll see him a little bit later.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a very great interrogation scene. So, the cut for a little bit. Now, this might have happened a little bit before this, but you find out that they're there at this place to pick up this data chip or something that the one non-Malibu thug picks up and looks at as though he knows exactly what it does.
Are we going to refer to every thug that's not Malibu as not Malibu?
No, just in this
group.
It's
Malibu and it's everybody else.
Right, you're either Malibu or you're nobody.
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. That's how I separated them. There's Bazooka Guy, right. Who apparently becomes, we find out in this scene, had that ski mask on, hiding his dreadlocks, and I guess this is our first sign that they might be South African, or at least not Americans. At least this group of terrorists.
There's also Lady Terrorist.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. She comes with Lady Russian Terrorist, I'm assuming. Unless if she's doing just a bad South African accent.
Could be.
So bad sounds Russian.
Yeah. So anyway, they start a shootout with those guys, or they start running away as the cop guy gets close to them, and this alerts our dreadlocked friend on the roof to see the other cop coming, and for the first time with this bazooka, he gets a true shot and nails the car and sets apparently everything on fire. And I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but it was very clearly wearing one of those thick padded fire suits.
Pretty obvious.
Like, they didn't even try to hide it. Like, it literally looks like the Michelin Man.
Some reason, the guy gets back into the car.
He's on fire.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. It was strange. I guess you're on fire. You're not really thinking clearly, but
I've never been on fire, so I'm not sure.
It's totally engulfed in flames. You might.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Not be thinking clearly. So I'll give him a pass, but
I'll give
usually they don't do that.
I'll give the filmmakers one thing. They probably had him do that so they could have the death scene without having to show the fire suit on fire laying on the ground to
possibly
make it any more obvious that it was not human.
That's a good point.
You know, it was not that guy on fire. And my favorite part is cop guy comes running out and then thinks he can jump inside the car and rescue his partner who is completely engulfed in flames with his
bare hands.
Open
the door.
Yeah. And then kicks the door.
He has to be dragged away, physically dragged away. That's how much anguish he's in. He's going to jump into that burning car.
And then I think, I want to say the cut from here is back to One Rocket Charlie. taking our Shakespeare quoting main villain and Julian Assange over to their next stop to pick up the next piece of the targeting system, because apparently it's a Zelda puzzle and you need to find the four pieces put together to be able to use this thing inside of the briefcase. And he is the sleaziest, like stereotypically written, LA, guy in this movie.
He's like a businessman almost.
Yeah, businessman walks up and he's like, would you like a taste of my, whatever he called the two women he was with, you know, before. And then, the guy says something about, you know, no, it's a strictly business here, or quotes something probably. And then they go off.
He mentions like, oh, you're still quoting Shakespeare, I see, or something like that.
Yeah. Yes, I forget exactly what he says, but he did. And then they cut to, they go upstairs to a completely empty bar in a country club thing, which kind of eerily looks like the bar they were just at downstairs, just from a different angle.
It was the best time they could shoot.
Yeah.
No one was there.
Yeah, it's not like no one's ever had to shoot at a bar and try to make it look more full than it is. That's never happened.
We might have ripped off Skyscraper's idea
before. So he gets the piece together and this guy thinks he's going to be in on it, you know, and this is the first time when we're in shock, the main villain is just going to kill everybody that's helping him. And shoots this guy and he does the greatest action movie fall out of window Wilhelm scream death that the first one of the movie, which again takes a while to alert the police, because you would think that the slowness of getting from that spot up to the helicopter, which apparently she didn't hear anything. I guess she keeps the rotors going the entire time, wasting her gas in her helicopter.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy, because he says, wait for us, so maybe she thinks it's going to be, like, real quick. I don't know.
And then my favorite part is when they get back into the thing, I believe he says when they get back into the helicopter, he goes, I'm running late, we have to go.
I think so.
Everybody's late.
Everybody's running late. It's L.A., after all. So it cuts from there to... this movie's so ridiculous, we got to go bit by bit just so we can comment on everything. We cut to the interrogation of Kenny G going on where apparently he's now, like, taking full American, I want my lawyer.
He's lawyering up, man.
He's lawyering up.
Lawyering up.
And then that turns cop guy into bad cop guy. And he almost kills the man inside his police precinct.
With his chief there.
With his chief standing right next to him.
It was one of the, it's classic, you know, you're going to pay for what you did. But like, yeah. you're not above the law. You got to be better than them, kind of thing.
Yeah, you're a hothead.
Yeah, you need to go cool off. Yeah. I don't know what his name is, Gordon. I think.
Yeah.
Cool off, Gordon.
Yeah, cop guy works.
Cop guy. Yeah.
So then we go out, and then we meet dispatch guy.
It was Gordon, by the way. Gordon Wink.
There it is. Yeah, the last name is just atrocious in this movie.
That's why I refuse to call anybody by their actual real thing, except for Run Rocket Charlie.
did they say her name? What's her name?
It's Carrie. Carrie Wink. I'm reading the wiki page for Skyscraper, which actually is helping me fill in some holes of this plot. Just very quickly.
Am I actually staying on track?
For the most part.
Okay.
Just so people know what the plot is for what the villain's plot is. Apparently, he's intent on collecting a series of 4 interlocking electronic devices or circuits that can somehow, quote unquote, shift the balance of power in the world. I've watched this movie twice. This is the first time this is connecting.
I think he says it once.
Yeah. I do remember him saying shift the balance of power in the world, but we never understand why. We don't understand if it's going to shut down, is it an EMP? Is it going to just shut down all the electricity? Is it going to wipe out everybody's debt? Is it going to just blow up the world? Is it going to snap its fingers and destroy half of the population? No, we have no idea.
No.
We have no idea.
No idea at all.
The writers couldn't think of something let's just give it some kind of explanation where it's very vague.
Right.
Yeah.
Leave it up to our imagination.
So we meet dispatch guy, who has one of those really cheap headphones things for the telephone. Yeah. And he, for some reason, has a direct line to Interpol, apparently. Because he's already got information for the Zardev or whatever the one guy yelled back at the Zyrtec plant, he's not a lot of information, so cop guy tells him to stay on it and get some more information, so he stays behind, and essentially the next times we see him, he's basically just keeping the chief off his ass, sort of thing, to the cop guy. So we cut from there, and then I believe the next scene from there is they actually show up at the skyscraper, I believe.
Hey, that's the name of the movie.
Yep. Yep, they show up at the, I think it's like the Zyrtec headquarters or something.
Zytex. It is not a movie about heartburn medication.
It kind of gives you heartburn, though.
Yeah, it's kind
of. This is The Skyscraper, that's the name of the movie, is an 86-floor building, but has about, 11 people that work inside of it.
Give or take.
Give or take, 11 people?
Yeah.
Apparently in the plot, this is when he meets up with Cranston, the possessor of the 4th device.
Yeah, that's the.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, that's
the guy that gets shot.
Yeah, that's the guy that shows up with the short guy with the cool shades, that apparently they know has a weapon because of some infrared laser detection or something that's in the building, that they can follow all the tags they use to get in and out of the elevators and all that. They can track people with that, and then there's this extra thing that tracks elsewhere, basically just to fill out how they would be able to track everyone else that does not have one of these card things in the office building. So they go up and meet them. In the meantime, I think right before that is when we meet the Rick Moranis stand-in.
The cop.
The geeky security guard who thinks he's Dirty Harry, which becomes important later on. So he goes upstairs, and then the plot begins where they end up murdering the security guard at the front gate without anybody noticing, and the dreadlock guy is stands in as a security guard to let Cranston in. So we already know things are afoot at this point. And so as they go upstairs, they're already in the control room tracking everything. Julian Assange is already tapped in to everything, so you can keep track from the center point there. And then we cut back to the nerdy Rick Moranis stand-in, who all of a sudden decides that he's going to go on patrol from his desk on the in the VIP floor. And he leaves his desk, but not before getting made fun of by the janitor of the building on the way out. Because they just need a point for you to know that this very important dumpster is where it is at this point. What they don't explain is how the guy disappears for so long that that thing is there from the time all of this is going on to when Run Rocket Charlie runs into it. So we also get introduced to the B-plot? C-plot? Of this guy that sneaks into the CEO's office and because he needs to help update some software on his computer.
I forgot about that guy.
I have literally no idea what that point of that this part of the story is.
He's kind of like the third-rate Ellis from Die Hard.
Yeah.
He's just like some scumbag dude.
Yeah.
And oh, we forgot the whole thing where
between, it doesn't matter.
I'm not going to go full back. But between buildings 2 and 3, the terrorists rip off the radio signal on the helicopter. So now they have no idea where One Rocket Charlie is.
How unfortunate.
When they go, this is when we find out from the cop that, you know, there are only 7 helipads. We have to go check them all. At that point. But so anyway, we get in there, and so then we get to the main crux of this movie, which still has about 45 minutes left in it.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
By the time we get to this point, which felt like an eternity.
It takes so long.
So we get to the point, he double-crosses Cranston, gets the piece, or tries to get the piece, but he leaves by elevator, runs into One Rocket Charlie, gives her the briefcase for some reason. I don't know what he thought. He was like, you know, I'll cover you, here's the briefcase. I don't know what he thought she would do with it.
He thought she was going to jump onto a window cleaning apparatus and then rappel down and crash into a window a la Die Hard. This is the absolute, the biggest ripoff of Die Hard moment.
Yeah, and it takes so long.
And it takes forever.
It's like a 2 to 3 minute scene.
Oh,
of her going back and forth.
Yeah, she just swings like a pendulum for like for 4 minutes before she breaks through. This movie is the longest 96 minutes of anybody's life.
Yeah, I kept looking at the time left, and it would say like 20 minutes, and then I look again.
I'm 25.
Like time reversed. I don't know what happened. It keeps cutting back from her swinging like a pendulum to the guy on the roof shooting at her and him just going, shit. And then I was like, come on, just break through the friggin' window already. It's not even exciting. The look on her face is more of like annoyance.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, I'm 80 stories up. This took so long.
And then I think she breaks through the window, and at some point, I think that she, when she goes through the window, does she go and find the Rick Moranis guy, or is this when she
runs into him?
Yeah, she runs into him. Yeah,
she hides the suitcase, and then that's basically when she runs into him.
Yeah, and then she puts it inside the trash can thing, which has been sitting there for apparently 20 minutes at this point in real time. That janitor went off somewhere.
Right.
And hides it underneath all the trash that's picked up, and then he, you know, gets the attention of the security guard, and, you know, she's looking for a place to hide and all that, and then they go off, and I don't know, was the reminiscing scene after this or before she runs into the security guard?
I think it's after.
Yeah.
It's after.
Okay.
Oh, she runs into the security guard, which leads to the firefight with Malibu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the security guard is the one that kills Malibu.
Right, yeah. And it was the most awkward firefight I think I've ever seen, because she runs around with the gun pointed straight up, but not at anybody. Like, okay, she's running away from Malibu, but the gun is still pointing straight.
Okay, good. Then we made it to this point where I counted on my hands that she got to at least 8.
And she has a 6-shooter.
She has a 6-shooter, and she gets to at least 8 shots before she hides. It's probably more than that, but is definitely more than bullets she has.
Yes.
And then he's firing his gun, which he definitely shoots more bullets than he has without any signs of reloading or having any bullets on him to be able to reload.
He probably shoots a good 20, 25 shots.
With what looks like a normal pistol.
Yeah, and that...
Call of Duty has taught us anything.
It's like 18 shots.
Yeah, 15 to 18 if Call of Duty has taught us anything.
Right.
And then eventually they catch up, and then he starts roughing her up a bit, and then finally...
He beats the shit out of her, he really does.
He does! Yeah. That's one thing, is, man, he, like...
He falls off
on him. I don't know how she doesn't... I don't know how Anna Nicole Smith didn't have CTE after filming this movie. Because he just, like, he hauls off and... And he must have made it look really good, because it looks like he smashes her head for real.
He smacks the shit out of her a couple times, bashes her head into the, like, the cabinet.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
And then eventually wrestles free for the gun. And then as he goes to pick up the gun, the shooter, Rick Moranis stand-in, shoots him from behind.
Not Rick Moranis.
Shoots him from behind. and kills, and then I think at this point she huddles into a room and then has the single most gratuitous movie in terms of both plot and nudity in this entire movie. Like, there is literally no point to it, in the sense that when you first learn, you think it's him teaching her how to shoot.
Well, she already knows how to shoot.
She already knows how to shoot because she's from Texas.
She's from Texas.
Yep.
So
then it's just a memory of the one time they fucked.
Outside.
Really? That's really what, in terms of her character, if this is a flashback, it's, oh, I remember that time where he thought he was going to teach me to shoot, and we just wound up fucking instead, because I already knew how to shoot.
And I messaged you guys, and as soon as she shoots the bottles, I just thought of that. I just thought of that Simpsons episode when Marge is on the lam and they go shooting cans, and they're like the old prospector, my cans, my precious antique cans, and it made it a little bit bearable for me.
And in terms of the acting, like, I don't know how well you act in a sex scene, but if there was someone that was so uninterested in sex more than Anna Nicole Smith in this sex scene, I, you know,
I don't know who it was, yeah.
The guy was entirely too young for her.
She was like looking, she's like looking at the director throughout the whole thing. It's like, when is this over? Are we done?
Right. Yeah, but he gets, not to be too gratuitous, but he gets some good shots in there too. Yeah, he gets some good, like, he gets in there.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, he
makes use of.
What's the right way to say it? He doesn't get cheated. That's for sure.
Yeah, and then after this is all over and we have this flashback, you know, we've gone through Malibu's dead, you know, which is when I was thinking about turning off the movie.
Yeah, that's like the rest of it's a blur, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I know that there's a kid.
Yeah, there's a kid, but, and his mom is working late there. The thing I want to point out is I thought when I saw the mom get shot by non-Malibu thug.
Non-Malibu thug number 7.
That they were going to have it that her and Warm Rocket Charlie and Cop Dude were going to adopt kid on the big wheel. And that was going to be their baby.
So two things here. One, the kid's name is Billy Ray. And I don't think there's any kid in Los Angeles named Billy Ray. Right? That's far too bougie of a city to name your kid Billy Ray. And second, this is where the main problem of the movie comes in. It gets so disjointed. You're following her. You're following the cop. Then you're following these other cops that come in. And then you're following the police chief. And you're just following too many people instead of just following Anna Nicole Smith's character.
Yeah. And it brings us to a point where a lot of stupid shit happens at once, where they try to piece everything together. So first off, we learn from the cops and all that who are trying to break in through little ducks and that every door in the building is electronically locked and you can't get in. And then 15 seconds later, they cut the cop dude opening up the roof door and entering the building.
Right, he gets in no problem.
They cut out the line where he said, except the roof, though. No.
Yeah, they cut that line out.
There's a scene where the firefighters try to get in, and the bazooka guy hits them with the bazooka,
yes.
Does absolutely no damage to the ladder, and the firefighters just tumble off.
Yeah. And this becomes the best scene. This is when it turns on its head, in that all of a sudden they set up C4.
Yeah,
and then they blow out a window, and then all of a sudden he comes over the loudspeaker and says that they're part of the liberation something, and they're, you know, the ideals of American freedoms, or whatever that speech was, where Julian Assange is giving him the fist pump. Every time he's like, yeah.
He gives him, like, a script.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Like, oh, wait, like, I gotta give him the script here, hold on. There you go. It's like written on a piece of like textbook paper or whatever. You know, it's so stupid. The C4. Like, I was like, all right, well, why is he setting up the C4? And he just blows it up for no reason. I think he might have killed two of his guys. I don't even know.
Yeah. And then the next scene. Yeah, we're just gonna jumble this all together because it doesn't really matter. Right. The next scene that's great is...
I barely remember any of this.
Is Cop Dude getting chased by our dreadlock friend. My favorite part is when he's all by himself and they show him in the security camera and he's doing all these stupid cop moves where he's like rolling on the floor and peeking around corners.
And that was another thing. The guy must have shot over 100 bullets.
Yeah.
And he had like a little Uzi.
Yeah.
He never reloads.
And stormtroopers had better accuracy than the thugs in this movie.
Yeah, he's running down a straight hallway. And the guy couldn't hit the broadside. He's hitting the wall. He's hitting papers. this shit's flying everywhere. And this guy's trying to use his, like, the cop guy is using his coat as a shield. Like, it's going to help him. And it's not very good. It's not very well performed.
Yeah, and then he does a cool guy rollout after, for some reason, jumping the cubicle to the next one, and then does the cool guy rollout and shoots our dreadlock friend. And then at this point, apparently, they've rounded up hostages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they're going to kill one every hour until
they get the
briefcase. Even know what the goal is.
Yeah,
the briefcase, maybe. And then a lot of dumb action movie stuff happens where she sacrifices herself for the hostages, and then we find out Slimy Dude was stealing money from the company, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
we find out about that, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
I don't remember that.
He offs it all to Shakespeare Terrorist.
Ellis 3.0.
And then he does a whole honor amongst thieves line or whatever. And then shoots. Oh, just one great thing was the fact when they first meet Roman Rocket Charlie and our villain, and he says a line and she goes, "Oh, Henry the Fourth."
Yeah, like she fucking knows.
But she doesn't, because they misquote which play it is.
Oh, because it's Henry the Fifth.
Yeah,
it's Henry the Sixth.
Oh, yeah.
So she says Henry the Fourth, but it's supposed to be Henry the Sixth. So that means whoever wrote this doesn't understand Roman numerals, because it's IV versus VI.
Right, Roman numerals and such.
Yeah. So anyway. So he shoots Slimy Guy, and then to their credit,
raped.
Yeah.
We missed the rape scene.
Oh yes. No.
Oh no, that leads up.
That leads up to the rape scene. Right. He says because they take her to where she thinks the trash bin is, and then he says you can have your fun with her while they go and look for the trash bin. But it, as I believe Dan said in our chat about this. I give them credit for at least killing a hostage.
Yes. You never see other, like, Hollywood studio movies doing that.
Yeah, they do kill one hostage, and then and immediately she gives up all her convictions and goes, "Yes, I'll give it to you."
Yeah.
Immediately.
Never. Bang. All right, you got me.
You
called my bluff.
So we lead to the rape scene, which I still don't know, and I don't know if I want to know, if he actually even started raping her, or
he never gets her underwear off. He never gets his pants off.
Yeah.
He's just dry humping her.
Yeah. That point, which I swear that guy just, like, he's like, "I'm going to take my shot here." As he was doing the scene, because he just does that one gratuitous reach for no reason. He just gets a handful.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like these guys, they took advantage of the situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because Anna Nicole Smith is very well endowed, obviously.
Yeah.
So, like, listen, I know I'm in a shitty movie, so I'm gonna take what I can get here and just get myself a handful.
Yeah, and if they did, they are awful people.
Most definitely, they are in Hollywood, so they probably are.
Right. It was the 90s.
It was the 90s.
So she stabs him with a paper letter opener, I think? Or is it an actual knife? I think it was a letter opener. In the leg, and it ends up killing him.
He falls out the window. Doesn't he break through the window?
She shoots him out the window.
Shoots him out the window.
There's so many windows that get broken in this movie.
Yeah, and I thought this was going to lead to her spending the rest of the movie topless, killing terrorists.
Well, that was interesting. Like John McClane, with no shoes on.
Yeah, no shirt for the rest of the movie.
I at least thought she was going to flash someone to kind of distract them.
Yeah.
Look over here, and then her husband comes out and blasts the dude away.
I thought something was going to happen to the effect of that. The other thing that we just jumped around and all of a sudden the designer of the building comes in, and apparently the South Africans have been planning this because they paid that guy $1 million or whatever to design the building, and that they knew exactly what the security system was like?
He says he designed the building to withstand sieges.
Yeah.
That's such bullshit.
Yeah, it's like, why?
Who just needs a skyscraper to withstand a siege?
Yeah. In a pre-9/11 world.
Right, it's not a castle. Like, what are you talking about? There's several entranceways into this place. It's ridiculous.
And then that just leads to, you know, eventually it's the hide and go seek where one of the thugs and terrorists pops out and ends up getting killed by one of our main protagonists, whether it's Cop Dude or One Rocket Charlie, until the, they get, this is where I lose it. I don't know when the final confrontation happens.
At the end.
But I'm like, was it her and him, or was Cop Dude there at that point?
Cop Dude was there, but she's the one that, like, she apparently knows Kung Fu, and if she kicks the gun, punches him, and then he falls off the skyscraper. She saves the kid. She lets it,
what happens with the kid, she saves him the first time, then like a fucking idiot, he's driving around on his big wheel again. For no reason. And he gets caught, and then the bad guy pretty much uses him as a human shield / bait, and they make a little bit of and then Nicole Smith's character makes a trade that you give up the boy, and I'll take you wherever you want to go in the helicopter. Yeah. But of course, the guy's lying. There's a standoff. I think cop guy gets shot, but lives. And then she pulls out the kung fu that you were talking about and just knocks his ass right off the building, where he conveniently lands right in between two cop cars.
Yeah.
And the two cops are just kind of like half-heartedly staring at him, like trying to pretend to seem interested. Like, oh, yep, yeah, he fell. He's dead. There you go.
Yes.
And I forgot to add the non-Malibu thug. When he went out the window and fell, they tried to play it off as they threw a hostage out the window.
Right.
Which is actually kind of smart.
Yeah.
But there are little bits and pieces of this movie where I kind of give it credit. Like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. I get that. But overall, this movie was such a huge dumpster fire.
And then it leads to the grossest part of the movie. We're outside the ambulance, and Anna Nicole Smith kisses the child actor on the lips.
Oh, like right on the lips. She doesn't even try to feign going for the cheek. It's just like, give me a kiss, and boop, right on the lips.
And then she gives her medical opinion that the mother is going to be absolutely fine.
I told you your mom was going to be just fine.
She's like in critical condition.
And then they all just pile into the back of the ambulance together.
Yeah. they sit down on the ambulance after the mother gets wheeled in on the stretcher. She's got the breathing, the breathing tube in, and they sit down on the back of it. They gotta go, guys. This woman's dying.
She's in critical condition.
Right. Let's just hang out here for a few minutes. I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
It was amazing.
This movie made me laugh so hard.
It was tough to get through, though, I gotta be honest. Because it just felt like... Once Malibu eats it, man, there is just so much left in this movie.
Because he's the only person having fun in this movie.
Malibu is like recognizable. It's like everybody else is just boring, and this guy with his shock of long, flowing Beauty and the Beast haircut. It's like the Beast.
Right. He's just eating up scenery, man. It's great.
Yeah.
And then he just dies in the first half, and then it's just like, oh. We're just dealing with Anna Nicole Smith running around this The Skyscraper. Yeah, that's the name of the movie.
I think you're right.
Fires. And they just bit off way more than they can chew. In terms of plot lines.
That was my favorite part that we skipped over, is when she sets the fire, Julian Assange tries to put out the fire with the sprinklers and realize that he cut the sprinkler system when they had first entered the building. So he sends one of the thugs to go to kill the fire, and all we see is a fire extinguisher put the fire out.
But that's it. Like, no person. It's just like the hand and the fire extinguisher.
It could have very well easily have been One Rocket Charlie to put that out. For all we know, you know, that guy never got there to do that.
This movie was just so all over the place, so poorly acted. I think it got, like, on IMDb, 2.6 out of 10 or something like that.
2.8, yeah.
2.8, how? How? This movie should be zero. At least, like, a one. This is ridiculous.
It's a bad one. Suffice it to say, Nicole Smith never became the A-list celebrity that she was hoping she'd be.
I kind of feel bad for her, because she is trying in this movie, and she just does not have it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I would laugh if it wasn't so sad.
Yeah. It's shit show.
Yeah. Putting it nicely.
It's shit show. But that is the plot. Is this the worst movie we've watched so far?
Absolutely.
Is this worse than... It is, right? It's the worst than Land of the Time Forgot.
Well, because at least in that movie, the acting isn't as bad. It's not good, but it's not as bad.
At least those are actors.
That's true,
Like, with history in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah,
and it's competently made.
Yeah.
This one is definitely not... competently made.
No, it you put it perfectly, Ann. It's not. It didn't have enough sex to be softcore porn, and it didn't have good enough action to be a Die Hard ripoff.
Yeah, outside of the first action scene in the alleyway, which I thought they did a decent job with, decent production value.
Yeah,
it's a lot of nothing. It's a lot of just like people in office buildings running around, occasionally hitting something with a bullet.
I'm looking at some of the goofs, and some of these goofs are even just like unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they shoot one of the hostages, and the blood pack is clear; it's not red. Like this is stuff that should be easy.
I wonder if there's a goof in there, or if someone complained about going, how could she be a helicopter pilot with nails that long, or something really stupid like that.
Right.
Well, this is a factual error. This has nothing to do with her nails, but an ordinary helicopter charter pilot wouldn't be wearing a G-suit or any part of one.
Right, they make her out to be like a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
Throughout the shootouts, the number of shots are more than the weapons can perform without reloading.
Do they have the number for her, or no? Did nobody do the math?
They didn't
do the math.
Throughout the movie, we are shown the 26th floor as the highest point of the building, but as descriptions and talk throughout the movie state 86 floors. And no matter where the Heliscort helicopter lands in Los Angeles, is always the same rooftop.
Well, did you notice whenever they shot the CCTV shots, the security cameras, they were always like on the ground or like eye level. Like, what security camera shoots from that angle? It's so poorly made, like you guys said. And it's weird because there are parts where they do give a shit, which makes no sense. Like, why would you do that? Just go all out and not giving a shit. Don't kind of give a shit.
Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... the Fantastic Four movie is by far the best movie we've watched, I think.
Yeah.
And even if we included this with the all the other movies that we've ever done, like for Halloween and stuff like that, this is the bottom movie.
Yeah. I think Code of Horror would be coming
close. Code of Horror is close. Yeah.
But that has Ernie Hudson in it, and Ernie Hudson raise that movie for when he's on screen.
Yeah.
Correct.
To a certain level. So, yeah.
All right. Is there anything else we can possibly say about this?
I think that's all we could say about this movie. So,
Dan, on a scale of 1 to 1 Rocket Charlie, what do you give this movie?
Well, I didn't understand what you were getting. Like, when you messaged us, I was like, what? Is that a typo? But now, obviously, I do get it. On a scale of 1 to 1 Rocket Charlie, it's bad memory flashback to shooting bottles. That's what it is. That's where I rank this movie. Terrible flashback.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to look it up, but I don't even know if R is even rocket.
Yeah,
in the Army or Marine or whatever.
The phonetic alphabet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it might.
No idea.
Maybe, but it was. I am shocked that they didn't go to a Fuller 69 in this movie.
That would've been good.
That would've been fun.
Yeah.
Something different.
All right, so that is it for the original Skyscraper film. So are you guys ready for some trivia?
Yeah.
Bring it on.
All right, Dan is 2-0 so far.
Yeah.
Come on, Mark.
So who went first last week? Was it Mark?
It was me.
Last week. So, Dan, it's your turn to go first. Our first category is skyscraper trivia. Oh. Not the movie, but actual skyscrapers.
Oh, okay.
So we're just going to get right into it.
All right.
The world's first skyscraper was built in which U.S. city?
Baltimore.
Wrong. Mark, can you steal?
Chicago?
Yes, it is.
Oh, there you go.
The Chrysler Building?
No.
Well, that's in New York.
Oh, then Manhattan.
The home insurance building was built in 1885.
Yeah.
Good job, Mark.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, your question. In what international city does the current tallest skyscraper reside?
Dubai.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Thank you, Fast 7.
That one I think I knew, actually. So.
Burj Khalifa in Dubai of the United Arab Emirates stands 2,717 feet. Yeah. So Mark has...
And apparently you can drive a car out of one into the other, into a third, and survive.
With very little problems.
With no problems at all.
Is it which Fast and the Furious movie is that?
That's 7.
Okay. And then, so Mark, it goes back to you.
Yeah.
It is Anna Nicole trivia.
Nice.
This is incredible.
If this is the one I sweep, I'm going to get really mad.
Mark,
go ahead.
In what U.S. city was Anna Nicole born?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark, and because I'm going to assume it's a Texas city. Say Dallas?
You're incorrect.
Okay.
Dan, can you steal?
I don't think it's something like that. I don't know. Nashville?
Wrong. Mark, you were close. It was Houston, Texas.
God damn it.
Yeah, my second guess would have been San Antonio if I was allowed to have two. So I wouldn't have gotten it right anyway.
Okay.
Okay.
Dan, your question.
This is more Anna Nicole Smith stuff.
More Anna Nicole Smith.
God damn it.
What year was Anna Nicole named Playmate of the Year?
With Playboy.
Yep. Oh, shit. 89?
Wrong. Mark, can you steal?
1993?
That's correct.
Oh, what? Mr. I don't know if she was with Playboy or not. Get out of here.
Mark's cheating.
Nope.
Mark's got that issue.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Mark must have that framed somewhere. My prized Anna Nicole Smith.
It's framed in my office right next to the map for our D&D campaign. Hey, look at them both for inspiration.
Oh, so man, Anna Nicole Smith.
Mark is
show me the way.
A 3-point lead.
Yeah, I'm wasted on this.
Okay. Back to skyscraper trivia. Mark,
yeah.
It's your question. How narrow is the Flatiron Building at its narrowest?
Oh, Jesus. Let's say 6 feet.
Mark gets another point.
Jesus, wait, that's
what?
A complete guess.
Six feet? Yep.
God damn it, Mark. Hey, you took this one.
Mm-hmm. I was like 200 miles off from being perfect so far.
Dan.
Okay.
In August 1974, Philippe Petit walked on a high wire that he rigged between the Twin Towers.
Okay.
How long in minutes did his walk last?
Jesus.
I've seen this movie too. Was it 83 minutes?
No. Mark, can you steal?
For some reason, the number 88 minutes popped in my head, but I think that's an Edward Norton movie.
I believe it's an Al Pacino movie.
Al Pacino movie.
So that's your guess is 88
minutes?
88
minutes, yeah. So I'm
it's incorrect. The answer is 45 minutes.
Okay, yeah. God damn it. This is hard. I'm not good at this stuff.
It's Dan's question again, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Dan, back to Anna Nicole trivia.
Woo!
What was the age difference between Anna Nicole and her second husband, J. Howard Marshall?
It's gotta be like 40 years.
Incorrect.
I said it.
Okay.
It's not
it's
my
not 40.
He must have been 80. I'm, 32. I'll go 31.
31.
Yeah.
That is incorrect.
Okay. Yeah. That's, it's probably like 50.
Mark.
What's
the age difference between Anna Nicole Smith and her second husband, J. Howard Marshall?
So my thought process here is that I think she's early 20s, so I was thinking 24. And I'm just going to say 80, so 56.
Incorrect.
Okay.
The correct answer was 63 years.
Wow.
She was, I will tell you what, how old she was when she got married. How old was she? 26 years old. He was 89.
Jesus. God, I didn't realize. Oh, that's gross. Good for her.
Let's see. According to the wiki, she reportedly never lived with him, never had sex with him, or kissed him on the mouth more than 10 times.
Hmm. But she loved him. That I know for sure.
She maintained that she loved her husband and age did not matter to her. 13 months after the marriage to Smith, on August 4th, 1995, Marshall died in Houston at age 90.
Wow, she only had to put up with him for a little over a year.
Yep.
Yeah, smart woman.
Mark.
Yes.
Your Anna Nicole question. Who was eventually named as the biological father of Anna Nicole's infant daughter, Danielle?
What?
God, I forget his name. I'm going to be mad if it's the one I think it is, because he has a similar name to someone else in entertainment. But, yeah, the one I think it is his first name's David. I'll say, but that's not going to count. Can I take a stab at the other one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Howard K. Stern?
Incorrect.
Yeah, I don't even know. Not a clue.
Howard K. Stern was the other guy that was trying to prove his paternity to Dan Yellen, but the man that was eventually named his her biological father was Larry Burkhead.
Larry Burkhead. Okay.
Who's he? I don't even know who that is.
He was her father. The father of her daughter.
Wasn't it like her best friend or someone that lived with her or something?
Something like that, yeah.
He was a photographer.
He was a photographer, yeah. So Mark has taken it, but for shits and giggles, we're going to go through tiebreaker. We're going to do some math for this one, guys.
No way.
To hold your horses, to get a pen or a... I want to see your work, but it's a math problem. Pretty simple math problem. It's addition. So you're going to add a few things together.
Okay. Let's see if I can do this in my head.
Okay. So from her Playmate of the Year profile, we're going to add Anna's bust, plus her waist, plus her hips, plus the floor the party in Die Hard took place.
Ah, shit.
And the final number is the amount of starts The Rock made for the Miami Hurricanes.
I might actually know the number for that.
Wait, hold on. Are we supposed to know her bust and everything?
You add all these numbers up. Take all those numbers and add them up.
Where do I find them?
No, just take a guess.
Yeah, we gotta do it in our heads.
Yeah. You're supposed to do them in your head. Or write them down. Take guesses. So guess what her bust is, guess what her waist is, guess what her hips are. Add them together. Then add the floor of the party in Die Hard took place on.
Okay, do you want me to run through mine?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say her chest is like 46.
Okay.
Waist, she's a little bit bigger, so say 26. Hips, we'll say 34. This one I don't know, so I'm taking a total guess. We'll say it was like 52nd floor. And I believe The Rock only started 2 games for the Miami Hurricanes.
Okay, and what's your final number?
So that is, that was 46 plus... we'll say I had it in my head that was like 138.
Okay.
Something roughly like that. Because I think her stuff all adds up to about 80 something, 52nd floor, and then 2. So we'll say 138.
Okay. Dan?
I cheated a little bit off of Mark.
Okay.
Because I have no idea how many games The Rock started for. So I just took that, but everything else I guessed. I did 34, 24, 34, plus 2, and then I thought it was on the 60th floor.
Okay.
So I got 154.
154. Okay. So the actual numbers are, she was 36, 26, 38. The Die Hard party took place on the 30th floor.
Way off.
And Dwayne The Rock Johnson started 1 game for the Miami Hurricanes.
I thought it might have been 2.
So, his math was terrible because he was all over the map in terms of his numbers. But Mark was very close to what the final number was. The final number was 131.
Attaboy.
And Mark guessed 138. Somehow got to that number, even though he guessed 60 for the...
Well,
and it was at least 12 points higher on her bust.
Yeah, I had the weights correct. I did say 26.
There you go. And he was off by one for the Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
So Mark gets on the board.
Yeah, thank you, Anna Cole.
Mark is well-earned victory.
Yep.
that was way
The frame photo of the 1993 Playmate of the Year finally came in handy.
Right. He came up with that right quick.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I only basically did backwards math from when her movie career started.
Okay.
And was makes like, sense. It's early 90s for sure, because, you know, that would have been what put her on the map. And then she would have got the movies.
Educated guess. I like that.
I don't buy it, Mark. You're a filthy cheater.
I mean, I probably did see that issue, and that's probably what I remember her from. But, because my, you know, the older men in my family did the whole, you know, some would get Playboy, you know, some would pick up Hustler and stuff like that. Because I had a bunch of dirty old men in my family. So.
We just learned a little bit about Mark.
Yes. And South Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, I knew enough about South Philadelphia. Yeah. I figured as much. But, yeah, that was... not my best moment. I'm going to try to rebound next time.
I'm just glad I'm on board.
Yeah, I'm coming for you, Mark. Now it's a game.
All right, so that's going to do it for our Skyscraper podcast. I don't know when we're going to do our August one. Maybe it's probably going to be in conjunction with The Meg. That's a pretty big movie that's going to come out in August. I think August is going to be a little dead in terms of movies that we'll be able to figure out a movie to watch against. But yeah, we'll probably, you know, if it's not Deep Blue Sea, it'll maybe be something else. Maybe Jaws 3D or something like that.
Jaws the Revenge.
Jaws the Revenge is another good one. But yeah, no, this is Skyscraper. We hated it. Let us never speak of it again.
You're right. Yeah, it deserves to rot in hell.
Yes. We are the They Call This a Movie podcast. You can find us on Podbean at theycallthisamovie.podbean.com. You can find us on iTunes, just search They Call This a Movie. We're on Stitcher as well. Do the same thing. Just search for it. We are part of themaindame.com. We'll put some articles on there. We have our other podcasts that we do on that website on there as well. You can find it on Twitter at The Main Damey. You can find it on Facebook at The Main Damey. Anything you guys want to plug before we say goodbye?
We'll actually be dropping a new episode, I think, tonight of the Married Cinematic Universe podcast. Our Ant-Man and the Wasp movie review.
Ooh, so look forward to that.
Yeah, be on the lookout for that.
That is, how can you find that podcast?
We are also on Podbean. We are on iTunes if you just search Married Cinematic Universe podcast. I believe we're going to be on the Main Damey main website.
Mm-hmm.
You could also follow us on Twitter. It's at @the_MCU_podcast. And the Podbean, I always mess up. So I'm not even going to try to do that.
Okay.
iTunes is probably your best bet.
Yeah.
Yep. So, well, obviously we have Stranger Damies. Dropped the episode on Wednesday. You'll probably be already have listened to it, hopefully, by that point. If you are caught up. If not, we have the whole back catalog. We're in episode 27. We just got done with one of the first big bosses from the original content part of the podcast. And not that I'd like to pat ourselves on the back too much, but if you stick with us, the RP and characters get better as everybody gets more comfortable in front of a microphone. And I believe episode 27 may have been our best back and forth as a group of five that we've had so far. And it gets even better. We have a few more episodes from this session. Then we have our first live session that'll go up probably August. So yeah, I think there's enough episodes to make it through the rest of this month. And then we'll get to August there. But, So Stranger Damies, strangerdamies.podbean.com. We're on iTunes, Google Play. Well, that just updated the iTunes, thanks to Anthony, to host more than 20 episodes. So the last seven may have popped up all in your feeds at the same time. Slightly apologize for that. And also on there we have Talking to Strangers, where we do our little retrospective on the first 26 episodes. And how we've come to not be afraid to cross that red line that was D&D in our nerddom. So,
beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Perfect. Where can we find you on Twitter, Mark?
I'm at Off the Mark Tweet. And then Stranger Damies is at Stranger Damies. If you want to send any constructive criticisms or questions.
Cool. And Dan, you are at where?
I am at DAquino122. Don't at me.
Don't at him.
Don't at me.
And I am at Aunt Delvec. As we say in...
And we'll be proud to announce that we will all be producers on the Thai Cave Rescue movie starring Mark Wahlberg that is being produced by Fansense 09.
Yes. Can't wait.
I went down that cave, boss. Where? Tell me where those kids are.
Not on my watch. So as we do every at the end of every They Call This a Movie podcast, we tell the director of the movie to go fuck himself. This week it is Skyscraper director Raymond Martino. So for Mark Myers and Dan Aquino, this is Anthony Delvecchio telling Raymond Martino to go fuck himself.